It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wakefrey. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
I think it's a very difficult remedy for tenants. The fact that they may have to pay their rent into escrow, they have to be caught up in their rent at the time, that they have to give the notice. In other words, there's a lot of steps that have to be followed, and unless you follow them exactly, then your case will be dismissed and you have to start over again.
Steve Dickinson at the Legal Aid Justice Center guides us through what tenants must and must not do to get bad rental housing repaired by landlords. And our weekly question and answer session takes us through the process that establishes child support and sets the amount. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 27, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR.
Ain't gonna let injustice turn me around. Turn me around, no, turn me around. Ain't gonna let injustice turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up the freedom land.
And now, this week's news you can use. As Virginia struggles to balance the budget, we're going to see cuts in state funding. But one group has a plea to keep intact a crucial part of the money that goes to education. The Commonwealth Institute says public education funding for special programs designed to increase graduation rates more than pay for themselves and should not be cut. At present, 2 in 10 Virginians don't graduate from high school on time, and that statistic costs Virginia dearly. High school graduates earn more money, pay more in taxes, and consume fewer services such as health care and criminal justice services. A recent study by the Commonwealth Institute looked at 6 intervention programs aimed at increasing graduation rates. Preschool interventions, class size reductions, increasing teacher salaries, the scholarship loan program, comprehensive school reform, and enhanced career and technical education. For every dollar put into the programs, Virginia saw a $6 return. The study can be found at www.thecommonwealthinstitute.org. In other news, this year, Virginia came into full compliance with the National Voter Registration Act of 1993 and its requirement to provide voter registration services in public assistance offices. Congress passed the act to increase voter registration opportunities and ensure the integrity of the voting process. While most states created effective programs for mail-in and DMV-based registration, many neglected to offer voter registration in public assistance agencies. According to a new study published in October by Demos, Virginia's public assistance voter registration services had lapsed in recent years. The ACLU, the NAACP, and other public interest groups notified the State Board of Elections and the Virginia Department of Social Services of their declining registration numbers in public assistance offices. The state responded almost immediately to bring Virginia into full compliance with the law, and voter registration at public assistance offices increased 8-fold. The study can be found at www.demos.org. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright.
Turn me around. Ain't gonna let no hatred turn me around.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is tenant's assertion. A tenant's assertion is a court case a tenant may file against a landlord who has not met the terms of a rental agreement. Usually this is when a landlord has not kept the property in good repair. To file this lawsuit, you must be current in rent and stay current. You, or someone on your behalf, such as a building inspector, must have given your landlord written notice of the problem, and your landlord must have been given a reasonable time to fix the problem. If your landlord doesn't, you can file a tenant's assertion in general district court, pay your next month's rent into court, and have your case heard by a judge. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's legal term of the week.
We're back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time for our weekly question and answer session. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Danielle, and I'm from Richmond.
Thanks for being on the show. What's your question for us this week?
My question is, how do I go about obtaining child support from my child's father if he doesn't work?
And let me do a quick follow-up. Has child support ever been ordered or established before?
No.
Okay, there are two ways to go about doing that. One is through the Division of Child Support Enforcement, and the other is through the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court. We'll talk about the Division of Child Support Enforcement first. DCSE is a state agency that helps people collect child support. You apply for services. There's no fee involved. You give them information on the father, name, address, phone number. If he works, work address and phone number, date of birth, social security number, and they will file a petition against him and will actually serve that petition on him, and he's required to respond within 10 days. And if he doesn't, then child support can be established, and that order is served on him. And again, he has 10 days to appeal, and if he doesn't, then the support is ordered. There's a similar process through court. You contact the Court Services Unit of the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court that serves the city or county where he lives, which may be different from where you live, and you do have to file it where he lives. The court papers are served or legally delivered to him, and you get a court date. You go to court, and the court uses a very simple formula. It gets your income, it gets his income, and even if he has zero income, the court can assume or impute income to him. In other words, assume that he's fully capable of going out and getting a minimum wage job and working 40 hours a week at $6.55 an hour. Based on your income and his income or assumed income, the court comes up with a total income. Then the Code of Virginia has a child support amount, which is set for a child given a combined income of the mom and the dad. Then that child support amount is simply divided up between the parties in proportion to their income. For example, let's say the amount would be $300. Let's say you're earning twice as much as he is. Then your share would be two-thirds. His share would be one-third. One-third of $300 is $100. And the court would issue an order for $100 a month. The minimum order, by the way, in Virginia is $65 a month. Now, you said he has no job right now. Do you think he's capable of working?
Yes.
But at this point, he simply chooses not to.
Correct.
Well, that's not really a choice he has. And in fact, I have to say that not petitioning for child support is not really a choice that you have. It takes two parents to bring a child into the world. It takes two parents to support a child. The child is owed child support, and you as a mom have a duty to pursue that on behalf of your daughter. So, you know, I urge you to pursue one of these two things. You will get a child support order. There's no question about that. Now, enforcing that order is another thing, but there's a mechanism for doing that as well. If he doesn't pay the child support as ordered, either by DCSE or by the court, then you can go back to DCSE or back to the court, usually if he's behind a month or two or 3 months, and file what's called a motion for show cause summons. And he will be summoned into court to show cause or show a reason why he has not paid child support. And if he is able-bodied and just chooses not to work, the court may give him a chance or two to get a job or do a job search and start paying his child support. But ultimately, he could be jailed. And no one wants to see that happen, but no one wants to see a child go without either. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Legal Aid Justice Center in Petersburg, Virginia. We're talking with Steve Dickinson, the managing attorney of the office, and we will be talking about repairs. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Now, the first question about repairs is, who's responsible for making repairs to rental housing in Virginia? Is it the landlord? Is it the tenant? Who's responsible?
By law, the landlord is responsible for maintaining the premises in accordance with the applicable building codes and also maintaining heat and air and water and electricity.
Now, what if the landlord puts something different in the lease and says that the tenant is responsible for making certain repairs? Is that something that is enforceable?
Generally not, although there are certain repairs that aren't essential that the landlord may shift to the tenant.
Now, what should a tenant do if something needs fixing? What's the first step?
Well, the first step, and this applies to almost any problem that the tenant has, is to give the landlord a notice of the problem. And in almost all cases, in order for the notice to be official, it must be in writing and received by the landlord.
And how would you suggest doing that? Just a simple first-class letter, or would you suggest doing it by certified mail, return receipt requested, or would you suggest both?
Really, how notice should be done is it has to be either by mail or hand-delivered. And if it's by mail, there must be some evidence that it was received. So certified mail is always best.
Does the tenant have to be current in rent at the time that the notice is given?
He does, in order to continue with the process. And part of the problem with this is that that the process is rather arduous for the tenant. The tenant must give notice and then either be caught up with rent or be able to pay rent into the court waiting for the landlord to do the repairs.
So you're not permitted to just simply withhold your rent?
No. Just as there is no self-help evictions for landlords, landlords can't put people out without a court order, tenants can't just withhold the rent if the landlord's not complying with the law and have to follow the process as laid out by statute.
Well, what about the tenant just using some of the rent money to simply repair the premises after, you know, giving the landlord notice that they want to do that and then deducting the cost of the repairs from the rent? Is that permitted under Virginia law?
I mean, the tenant cannot do that. The tenant must follow the statute, which requires them to give notice and be current on their rent and then file what's known as a tenant's assertion complaint. That is a lawsuit that is a simple form to fill out. Then the tenant must pay rent into the court's escrow account until the court can hear the matter, and then the court can decide what happens at that point if the landlord hasn't made repairs. If the landlord makes his repairs, then usually the case is dismissed and the rent that's been collected is returned to the landlord.
And if the repairs have not been made, what is the judge going to do at that point, assuming that the judge believes that all of the prerequisites were met, that the tenant was current, paid rent into court, gave the proper notice to the landlord before filing?
Well, the court has a variety of remedies at its disposal. It could declare the lease broken and then refund or give the rent money placed into escrow to the tenant. It can give part of the rent to the tenant and part to the landlord, depending upon how much the property was devalued by the fact that the repairs weren't made, or it can pay a private contractor to go in and do the repairs out of the money that's being held in escrow, and so that the tenant's money goes to actually repairing the property, which is what I think ultimately we want the landlord to do.
Sure. Now, you mentioned before the tenant can file this lawsuit, this tenant's assertion that the tenant has to give written notice to the landlord. How long a period of time does the tenant have to wait between the time that notice is given and the time the lawsuit's filed?
Well, it's generally a reasonable notice, and it sort of the court looks at the type of repairs that need to be made. If it's an emergency repair, the tenant can give a very short notice. For instance, if the furnace breaks in the middle of winter, the tenant can give 24 hours or just a few days notice for the landlord to repair it. If it's something else like paint or repairs to the structure, then the tenant may have to give longer notice, maybe up to as much as 30 days.
So there's nothing actually set out in the Code of Virginia that says it must be X number of days notice if it's this type of situation, Y number of days if it's this type of situation. It's kind of a case-by-case basis?
It's a case-by-case basis. However, if the tenant's goal is just to terminate the lease and not to try to stay in the property, and what we're talking about here is a tough choice for the tenant. The landlord hasn't made the repairs. Tenant gives notice, and the tenant may not have an option to move, or it may not be feasible for him to move. But if it is feasible for him to move, then the law lays out the fact that the tenant can give the landlord 21 days to make the repairs, and if the repairs aren't done in the 21 days, then the tenant may terminate the lease within 30, and then he'll have to move.
And in that situation, can the landlord come back against the tenant and say, well, you may have sent me this notice, but I don't think it was a good notice. I'm going to hold you responsible for the rest of the lease, whether it's another 3 months or 6 months. Can the landlord take that position?
Well, the landlord, it is required if the tenant terminates the lease to mitigate his damages, which means that he's going to try to re-rent it as soon as possible. And he can only hold the tenant responsible for those damages that he actually suffers. He just can't say that he's liable for the rest of the lease. And of course, in order for the landlord to do that, usually he files an action in court, and the tenant can come in and defend on the fact that he properly terminated the lease with this notice. Then it's up to the court to decide whether the notice was proper or the termination by the tenant was proper.
So the tenant can give this notice and wait the time and then move and take their chances, or I guess the tenant can give the notice and then file the tenant's assertion and take sort of an affirmative action against the landlord to terminate the lease.
Right. The taking the tenant's assertion route is the main route and primarily the only route that the tenant can take in order to stay in the property and force the landlord to make repairs. The one other option that tenants have is to complain to the local building inspectors. And this is a risk. If the property's condition is so bad that the building inspectors condemn the property, then the tenant is put out. If the property can be repaired, however, then sometimes the building inspectors will give the landlord a written notice saying they have to make repairs within a certain period of time. And once that time period has gone by, then the building inspectors may take action against the landlord to enforce their duty to keep premises in a habitable condition within the city or county.
Now, you said that if the premises are in such bad shape, the tenant can be put out. What's the process there? I mean, if the property is so bad that it's condemned, what happens?
Building inspectors have police-like powers to come into a property and say that this is unfit for human habitation, and they can, at that very moment that they're there, post notices and tell everyone in the house they have to go. So it's a tough choice for tenants who are facing these problems. If they go to the authorities, then they may be put out. If they follow the other route, they may have to face paying a lot of money and waiting a fair amount of time to finally get their day in court.
If the building is condemned, if the dreaded red tape goes up around the property, I mean, the tenant just has to, on very short notice, find another place to be and get their possessions out.
Exactly. And aside from suing the landlord for damages, There's no real remedy that tenants have to force landlords to put them up somewhere else. I think a lot of tenants believe that if the house is condemned, then the landlord is required to put him up in a hotel or another apartment. But there's while there are statutes that allude to the landlord doing that, they all seem to say it's the landlord's option.
So in other words, the property is condemned, the lease is ended, landlord has no more duty to provide rental property, the tenant has no more duty to provide rent?
That's right. The duty to provide rent ends at the same time that the property is condemned, and I guess that's the one benefit the tenant has. And then the tenant can also sue the landlord or seek damages against the landlord for not maintaining the property as he's required by law.
What type of rental repair problems do people bring to legal aid that may or may not end up in court?
I think we sort of have two kinds. There's the just neglect type problems where it may be a leaky roof that's gone on too long. It might be some plumbing that over the years has gone bad. And then there's the other problem of a landlord willfully terminating essential services or not making repairs in order to put the tenant out. Repairs aren't made, and the landlord doesn't want to do it for the expense, but then the landlord may decide that this is an easier way to put the tenant out rather than going through the court process.
What if you have a situation where a landlord is deliberately not making the repairs and, in fact, maybe even taking action to force the tenant out, whether it's like cutting off utilities or something of that nature? What's the tenant's remedy?
Well, the tenant actually has more options available to him in this case because this is clearly illegal, that the landlord can't allow conditions or create conditions which make the property uninhabitable. So they can't terminate water or heat or electricity, and the tenant may give the landlord notice or may proceed directly to court and seek an injunction, a court order from the circuit court, which tells the landlord he must restore those services. And then the tenant can seek actual damages against the landlord for unlawful ouster, which is illegally and willfully putting the tenant out through a method that's not allowed by law.
And that's probably going to require the tenant to get an attorney to go into circuit court.
Yeah, almost absolutely, yeah. An injunction is a fairly complicated thing and you usually have a very short period of time in which to do it.
And I guess one final question is go back to the tenant's assertion, which would be filed in the general district court. And I guess the tenant can do that on his own or her own without an attorney with a small filing fee. Do you find that to be an effective remedy for tenants?
I think it's a very difficult remedy for tenants. The fact that they may have to pay their rent into escrow, they have to be caught up in their rent at the time, that they have to give the notice. In other words, there's a lot of steps that have to be followed, and unless you follow them exactly, then your case will be dismissed and you have to start over again. We see this happen a lot with landlords who are not evicting properly, but for tenants, especially tenants who are trying to get a toilet fixed or some essential repair made, it becomes very, very difficult, and a lot of times tenants can't utilize it effectively.
And hopefully after this interview, more people will know what steps have to be followed. We have been speaking with Steve Dickinson at the Legal Aid Justice Center in Petersburg. Thanks very much for being on the show, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
We're back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about a landlord's access to rental property. The first tip is that the tenant must allow reasonable access to rental property. The second tip is that the landlord may not enter rental property without the tenant's permission unless it's an emergency, and the landlord cannot abuse the emergency exception. If the landlord enters rental property without the tenant's permission and it's not an emergency, the landlord is a trespasser. The third tip is that unless it's an emergency, the landlord must provide at least 24 hours advance notice to the tenant before entering rental property.
for the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This year, the General Assembly refused to make significant changes to the triple-digit interest rates charged by payday lenders, but began to limit the number of loans customers can take and offered debtors new routes to escape when trapped in a cycle of debt. Join us next week for the first of a two-part presentation by Jay Spear at the Virginia Poverty Law Center on changes to Virginia's payday lending law that take effect January 1, 2009. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Winkler.
My Lord.